Hello, I'm Chris Harmon from the Internets and Mozilla.
That's a great intro. Hi, I'm Ray Vango, developer evangelist for Microsoft. Yeah, my intro is nowhere near as good as yours.
Well, we work on that.
Yeah.
So today we're going to talk quickly about modern web development and what that means. And it's one of the most annoying titles that I can ever do for something, because modern web development is such a fleeting thing. I remember when table layouts were modern web development. And
you mean table layouts aren't modern anymore?
No. But there's long discussions on Stack Overflow where people say they were much easier than CSS, which drives me crazy. But let's not go there for now. So HTML5 to me is a new world. It's a new hope. You took the first step into a larger world. Let's stop with the science fiction things. HTML5 is much more than desktop out there. So we used to have these desktop machines where we actually defined we knew the resolution, we knew how fast these machines were, we knew the connections. At least we knew the connections were steady. And nowadays with HTML5 and mobile environments, we don't have that opportunity anymore. We have to be much more careful about what we do so we don't suck people's batteries dry, or we actually give them something where a button doesn't do anything. And there's nothing more frustrating than doing something on a mobile phone that takes like 2 seconds. On a desktop, we don't care. On a mobile phone, everything that takes longer than 4 seconds is the end of the world. And it fascinates me when people get the phone out and they're like, oh, it can't find me. This is so bad. And you're like, you are aware that this goes to space and back and talks to satellites for you. This is science fiction in your hand. But
they're not aware. That's just it. So it's like there's an expectation. It's like everything has to be fast, 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 fast. And then, you were telling me about in Sweden, I think it was, and you had a 100 megabit connection.
Yeah.
And then you come over here and you have like 50 megabits and you're like, I wish I was back in Sweden.
Yeah, it is just annoying. It's like, I want to download the internet and watch it offline later on. That makes much more sense. So we have new browsers, and the browsers have one goal, and they basically all support the same standard. And that is incredible, because in the past, browsers bashed their heads trying to be better than the other one. And nowadays, it's about the standard is there, let's all do that together. And of course, taking the show on the road, it's all actually mobile. And actually, we don't know anymore what people use to actually read our things, so we have to be much more flexible. So it's amazing what you can do nowadays with these new technologies, just with a simple a page that originally was that originally worked. So if I take, for example, I'm always staying at a certain cafe in where I do my work, and that's called the Cafe Vintage in London, and they don't pay me anything for this, but it's just a beautiful place to hang out. And this is a website that I built for them within half an hour, just taking their website as it was. They had a lot of flash and stuff, and now it actually allows you to actually go there and just drop down and have all these cool animations. And all of these things are nowadays done with, if you take a look at the source code of this, you will find that it's like about 20 lines of JavaScript, and the rest is done in a few CSS animations and transitions. So we have this power of these new technologies. We just have to take them on. And we're going to come back to that later, because I'm going to show how I've built that, because I built it on top of old things as well. So as we don't know connectivity, as we don't know what end users are doing out there, how can we develop for the unknown? How can we actually drive on this road and actually not crash into a ditch or into a big truck around the corner? Do we want to accelerate really fast and like hope for the best, or do we want to make sure that we arrive safe?
Well, it seems like a lot of developers are trying to accelerate very fast nowadays in some fashion, and so that's a little bit of an issue there.
Yeah, it is, but that's excitement. And I think if we do our job right, we can hopefully, with this series and other things, steer the excitement in other directions that are much safer, and we don't have young developers like basically smashed on the front of trucks, which is not a nice thing to have.
Okay.
So one thing that I've been talking about for years and I love to bits is progressive enhancement. Progressive enhancement means you take something that works and you enhance it to make it better. And the website that I showed you is a great example for that. It's just a long website, and if you go back to the page, you will see that if I turn off the JavaScript that I have in there, if I just get rid of the JavaScript completely, like I do that here, I take the script out, and I delete it, which didn't work good, so I highlight it and delete it, you will find that the page still works. So the page now is just a long page with a few images, and the links just point to those images, and I can go up again and get the same functionality. And that is because I just wrote an HTML document that has a few links that point to anchors in the page, which gives me bookmarkability. It gives me all the features that the HTML or the web has, and I just hijack that in JavaScript to make the cool animations coming in and out. I didn't start with the animation. I started actually with a page that worked, and that's what progressive enhancement is about. I think the best example for progressive enhancement is an escalator. An escalator works, and if it works, it's really easy to get from one floor to another. This is in London, Angel, which is the longest in Europe. It's like 90 meters. And it's really annoying when the escalator breaks down because you have to walk up the stairs. But it's possible to still go up there. You're not stuck down there. So this is progressive enhancement. A staircase becomes a moving staircase when electricity is there, when everything works. If electricity is off, it's still a staircase. You can still go up there and you reach the other level.
Yeah, just know that if the electricity goes out, you're carrying me up the stairs.
Yeah, I probably will.
Okay.
I
just, I'll just jump on your back and you can lug me up. I'm not going 90 meters of the stairs.
I'll kick you up the stairs.
Oh, no. You have a violent streak, man. What is that?
Well, you just told me to jump on me, then I have to carry you up 90 meters. Oh, let's not go there again. Let's focus. So progressive enhancement means you start with something that works. Stairs work. They are very simple. Then hijack it to become better. How about these stairs start moving so people don't have to walk up them? Great idea. Test for support, then add them on. Do we have electricity? Yeah, there's electricity there, so we probably can build stairs. And there's no broken promises. Basically, the stairs, when you go there, they will work. They will not be stairs that actually have an invisible force field that you can't get onto it, which a lot of things that we build on the web actually have. And this is normally called graceful degradation. Graceful degradation does the same thing that progressive enhancement does, just the other way around. We come up with the shiny animations, we come up with the cool 3D world shifting things, and then we basically give a text fallback or a fallback for older browsers that says, oh, you should upgrade because it's much, much better if you did. And people, when you can't upgrade, that's incredibly frustrating. Mm-hmm. This is in London, in Heathrow, in the airport, which are three buttons in the lift. So a lift to me is the graceful degradation example with the escalator, because a lift normally, when there's no electricity, it doesn't work. You cannot pull a rope and pull yourself up.
That's and by lift, you mean elevator?
Elevator, yeah. But normally there are stairs next to the lift, so you can actually take the stairs when the lift doesn't work, which means they had to build a lift and they had to build the stairs, and they have to maintain both as well. And sometimes taking the stairs is a much worse experience. Like in hotels here, you can take the lift from the lobby to your room, but when you take the stairs, you normally end up in the kitchen or somewhere in the dry cleaning or someplace like that, because nobody expects anybody to take stairs when there is a lift. But if it's broken or if there's a fire, you need to do it. So graceful degradation means that you actually build two things instead of one, because one of them might fall over and will fall over, so people should use the other one. And you promise things that are not true. These buttons here in the lift in Heathrow are not buttons. They just show you which floor you're on, and the lift moves automatically. So every time I go in there, I see tourists pressing these things and getting very, very frustrated because they don't do anything. So it's totally pointless to have that interface because it doesn't work. And that's what we shouldn't do on the web. We should never show people things that don't work or lure them into doing something that doesn't work then. So in graceful degradation in web development, you start with a complex matter, you develop a fallback for other environments, you then maintain both, and you have a broken promise because actually something looks like it should be working, but it doesn't.
And it sounds like it's actually double the work, too.
Yeah, it is double the work. In progressive enhancement, sometimes you do much more work as well. But you do work that is actually making sense because you actually add to the people who can actually use these things. Whereas in graceful degradation, you just put it after the cause. You build something and then you put something in there to make it work. Now let's take a quick look at an example of that. There's a wonderful example of context menu. Firefox has context menu, which is an HTML5 feature, which actually allows you to put context menu on elements. You can see when I roll over this HTML here, and I do a right click, then I see a rotate and a resize. So I can rotate this one, and I can resize it with a right click, a menu that is in there. And for application development, that is incredible. I mean, I can do like text editors and say like translate this and all the functionality that I always had to write in the past I had to write browser extensions for, is now available to you in HTML. So the graceful degradation way of doing that right now would be this. So I have a button down there for other browsers that don't support the right-click menu. So if I go to Opera again, for example, here, I have these rotate buttons and the resize buttons. They do work, but you don't have the menu. And if you actually go on that page and you click around, you will find that you have a different way of doing it. So when I look at the source code of that, of the progressive and of the graceful degradation one, I have the menu in there, and I've got the image menu in there. So it works for both, but what if now all of a sudden Opera supported menu as well? Then I would have the right-click menu and the extra menu there. That doesn't make any sense. That basically it just seems superfluous. And every UX person will tell you more options in an interface actually mean more decisions for the end user, not more opportunities. It's confusing to people. So the progressive enhancement way of doing that would be to just have the list item in there as a UL. And then in JavaScript, I test if context menu is in document body and HTML menu item element is in window. And then I do the rest with JavaScript. I actually read out the ULs that I have in there, and I create a menu element, and I create the menu items in there, and put that into the document, and remove the other one. So if I try the progressive enhancement version of that one now in Firefox, I will get my right-click menu, and everything is shiny and happy. And if I go to another browser, and I just put the progressive enhancement in there, then actually we just have these buttons there that work. And we don't have a promise of a right-click menu hinted like it is in Firefox here. Like, when you do something like that, it's a good idea to change the icon of the browser as well to tell them there's different functionality. So yeah, with progressive enhancement, we build for the future rather than for the past, I think. That's the main difference there. Because if Opera in the future supports the menu element, everything will be like in Firefox, and I don't have to write extra code again. And I don't have to worry about it because I just tested for it, and as soon as the test is okay, it will be there. And I don't have to maintain that other menu out there that is a fallback to one of the others. So it seems a bit double work when you start it, but when you get your head around graceful degradation and progressive enhancement, then it's actually much easier than just providing fallbacks that make people unhappy, because you shouldn't have a punish people for not having the right browser. You just make it magically work for those who have the right browsers. So be flexible. Nothing will cause you grief in the future. Just test for things before you apply them. Simple. Don't make end users suffer for your mistakes. That's a main principle of HTML5. It's backwards compatible to older browsers. So when you make a mistake in HTML5, the browser will actually fix it for you, rather than when you made a syntax mistake in XHTML, it would be an error message in the page, and the end user would think, oh my god, what have I done? And they've done nothing. You've done something wrong. Understand the basics. Like when I said I had these buttons that go to targets in the page that I just hijacked and make something more beautiful out of it. Understand that this is how HTML works, and not just like build things in JavaScript that need JavaScript for navigation and simple things. Twitter used to have these hash bangs that actually made navigation only work when you had JavaScript, and now they got rid of them again because they realized the performance is not as good as they thought it was. And yeah, if JavaScript is broken by one way or another with a bad ad in your page or something like that, your page shouldn't die. But the main thing is to think about is as well, when you use progressive enhancement, you don't need it when you're in a fixed environment. When you write an app that will only be actually in iOS and packaged up as an app, there's no point to actually enhance back to Internet Explorer 6 because it will never be able to get there because it's already a closed environment. So a lot of the arguments are like, yeah, I only built for this, so why should I bother with that? And the answer is like, no, you didn't. You don't have to. You made a decision to only build for one environment, which also means you made the decision to repeat that for every other environment if you want to build for those as well. But you don't have to actually apply progressive enhancement to everything, just where it makes sense. And if it's on the web, then you can't control the browser, sorry. So the next big thing right now is responsive design. Yeah. People go crazy about this, and it's cool. It's a wonderful idea, because responsive design means you build one page, and the page recognizes the browser and the operating system, or actually the screen size that it's applied in. And it gives you different views for all these different screen sizes. And that's incredibly well done, because you don't have to write an extra BlackBerry, iPhone, Android app. You just basically have one page that recognizes where it's opened, and it does something with it. So if you look at this, the trick behind it is media queries in CSS. They apply CSS for certain scenarios. They're also available in JavaScript with Match Media now, in Firefox only at the moment, but other browsers are implementing that as well. And it's one design and many views. So if we want to take a look at that, responsive design demos, we have this responsive.html here, which shows how absolutely amazing I am in terms of designing things. Because it tells me now this is landscape, and if I re If I resize my browser, then you will find that it's annoying. First of all, it's really not fun to resize your browser, but that's the way how you test if your page is responsive. So in this case, I now have to get that handle there because I'd resized it anyways, and go into the page and now start resizing it. And then I realize, okay, if I reach a certain width, I do the background in yellow. When I do another width in blue, and another do another one in red, and you also see that landscape switch to portrait here. So in the past, we used JavaScript for that. We just basically read out the inner width of the page, and then we had to do all kind of throttling because Internet Explorer 6 fired during resize, and it wasn't fun doing that. And nowadays, with HTML5 and CSS3 in this case, actually, we have these media queries where you can say add media only and screen, max width is 1024, make it yellow, 780 pixels, make it blue, 480 pixels, make it red, orientation landscape, say it should say about landscape, orientation portrait, say portrait. So you have all this great functionality in CSS yourself, and people are going crazy about it.
And that's a lot of power, right? That's a lot of power and flexibility, which is great.
Yeah, because if you go, for example...
Responsive design was coined by Ethan Marcotte, right?
Yeah, Ethan Marcotte, and he actually he shows a great example on the Boston Globe. The Boston Globe website is basically the number one great example of what media queries can do. This is media queries, mediaquery.es, and if the wireless doesn't holds up here, it shows you that there's lots and lots of pages that have responsive design. And when you can see that when you resize the browser. Now, as I showed you, a really annoying thing is that resizing the browser can take a lot of time, and actually is nobody does that. And you get rid of all your URLs and your buttons, and you can't do the same things that you do whilst developing. There's a great showcase on media queries, mediaquery.es, that shows lots and lots of pages that are responsive design. And we can't load them right now because the wireless just flaked out on us. But what we also found is that so many people do this right now that in Firefox we have a new view in the developer tools. So with the web developer tools, I can go to responsive mode. And instead of having to resize the browser, I can just resize the document inside the browser now to test all these things out. And I can actually rotate and try landscape and portrait without having to resize the browser. So that's a great opportunity for developers that want to try out media queries to actually debug them directly in the browser. And I'm quite sure that other developer tools will go in that direction as well, because responsive design is a big, big thing right now. It's of course not without its perils. There's everything has its issues from time to time. So media queries allow for granular design changes. You can basically move things around, and it's not like floating like it was before in CSS. It's much more detailed in this. There's no need to do it in JavaScript anymore. And please don't do anything responsive fallback for Internet Explorer 6. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, let's not even just unless you absolutely have to for some reason. We can drop support for IE6 at this point. I mean, I know that even at Microsoft, we want IE6 to kind of go away. So I'm right there with you.
Good. There's possible performance issues, of course. If you have a page that has lots and lots of big images that are great on desktop and are hidden on a small device, these images will still be loaded. So you have to be clever about your resourcing inside your responsive designs. Match media is another feature now that in JavaScript does responsive design, which is actually you can send just the CSS queries that you have in your media query to JavaScript, and it then gives you a Boolean back saying like, yes, we are in this mode, we know it's portrait, we know it's landscape. That's very, very useful for game development, for example, in HTML5 on mobile phones. And the next thing I think we should need are queries for connection speed. It would be good if I can ask the browser, like, how fast are you? And it gives me back, like, okay, you can go wild on downloading large videos, which we can't do at the moment. It's not quite there yet. But that's something that Mozilla and also Google is working on quite heavily, because we want to have good experience on mobile with HTML5, and sometimes they're not yet. So what about legacy browsers? What about the old browsers that don't do all these things? Well, there's polyfills, and we talked a bit about this before. Polyfills allow you to put a JavaScript in and give that functionality to old browsers. Polyfills are also there to actually put the functionality in now to have a level playing field across all the modern browsers. So, for example, get media is input from cameras, which is supported in the nightly of Chrome at the moment and supported in one nightly of Firefox, but not in Opera and not in Internet Explorer. So Adios Mani wrote a polyfill that actually allows you to use Flash for the other browsers. So polyfills for now actually allow you as well to write solutions already to things across all the browsers, and once all the browsers support it, you can get rid of the polyfill. And that step a lot of people forget. It's like there's a lot of like old polyfill code and libraries in there to make things work that are not necessary. So make sure that you know a polyfill is something temporary and not something that should be there for the end of time.
Now there's a key difference between a polyfill and a shim though. There, with a polyfill, you're actually mimicking the actual standards API, and with a shim, you're getting JavaScript code that simulates the functionality, but the API may be totally different.
Which is even worse, I think. It's a good idea to actually give that functionality, but you want to learn the syntax that will be native in browsers in the future. You don't want to build another syntax on top of that.
Exactly.
So Modernizer is another great opportunity to test for things before you apply them. It actually tests the features before and gives you back and says, like, okay, you can use that now without you having to know actually to test all these things. You saw earlier the menu item, how I tested that on the body and on the window. That's the kind of black magic that is already in Modernizer for you without you having to know it. HTML5 Please actually gives you all the features of HTML5 and tells you when to be able to use them. It's green when you can use them now because they're supported well. Caution when you need to put a fallback in there. And the red means, like, this is very experimental. I wouldn't trust my money on it. I wouldn't bet my money on it or my products yet. HTML5 Boilerplate allows you to start from scratch with HTML5 with a zip file that has all the black magic in it that you don't need to worry about, and it's updated constantly as well. 320 and up is by Andy Clark, a CSS framework that does responsive design really, really well, and it actually it's enhanced with Sass and Less as well. So if you're into that and into Ruby and use them together, all of these things work. So if you want to start with responsive design, it's a great little CSS framework to start with that. You've got all the CSS stubs in there, and you just put your styles in where they apply, which is really, really useful, so you don't need to understand the whole syntax of media queries yourself. So as a rule of thumb, I think giving legacy browsers a working solution is much better than a full one that means a lot of work and doesn't perform. So we should be future-friendly. We should be thinking about a future that is really not defined, because it never is. It's like whenever we said, oh, this is the final thing to do on the web, that technology will be the future, never worked that way. Flash, a few years ago, was the only way to do video. Nowadays, we can do video with HTML5. We cannot do everything that Flash video does in HTML5. DRM, for example, we can't do at the moment. But it doesn't mean that everything has to be Flash. Technologies come and go, and especially use cases come and go. So there's a great website called Future Friendly, which actually explains to you the case. You know, it says, like, okay, we're now thinking about tablets, we're now thinking about mobile phones, but the next might be Kinect-style things where I just wave my hand in the air and something comes out of it like an Iron Man. That would be awesome. But we're not quite there yet. But the idea is that you free your mind of these constraints that you have right now and build on something that works and extend it when it's possible. And that way you will always be able to build for the future and not just, like, make things work for the past and have something cool in there for the new browsers. That's not the idea of embracing the future.
Cool. And I saw you mention Aaron Gustafson's great book.
Yes. You're incredibly good in that.
I'm right on top of that, man.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Your slides are they're engrossing. I'm, like, floored by them.
Well, this was a wrong order, though, but fair enough. Let's start with something for you to read, and that is Adaptive Design by Aaron Gustafson. Aaron Gustafson is a very, very nice guy, has been in web standards for years and years, and he's written this little book that is about this thick. It's nice, big print, has pictures in it, colorful pictures as well, so it's really not boring to read, and it's a great introduction to progressive enhancement and responsive design all in one. And it has this nice little chameleon on the front. So when I read it in trains, I had kids coming up to me and asking if they can read the book. And then they didn't understand it. But it was still cute to see that.
So it wasn't Goodnight Moon then, basically.
Yeah, it didn't work that way. But it's really easy to read and something you can have on your desk to just leaf through from time to time. It's also not expensive. All the money goes to Aaron and to the other things that he does in web standards as well. A little bit goes to charity, I think, as well. It's a great book to get you started on that whole progressive enhancement and responsive design, because that's what the future is to me. It's like, free yourself of the idea that you can control something on the web. Just give the best experience possible to the environment that people actually have at the moment. If your website looks the same in every browser, on every platform, you're actually limiting the web, you're limiting your imagination, and you're limiting the end user's experience, because you give the lowest common denominator and not the tasty stuff. Arab Balkan says it like when it comes to app development. Think of food when you think about coding. Nobody goes out and stands up in the morning and says, like, you know what, I want something edible. People instead say, like, I want to have something tasty. I want to have something that I enjoy eating. And we should think the same with our web solutions.
That's a good analogy. Yeah.
And with that, thank you for watching. And we'll be back.
Thanks for watching, guys. This is great.